Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris, and I am the founder of Morris Invest. Rehabbed thousands of homes, and we're all about buy and hold real estate here on the show. If you are new to the program, this is what we focus on, helping you build passive income. You buy properties, hold them for the rest of your life, and they cash flow for most of your life. We teach you about the tax strategies. We teach you about everything on this show, including insurance, and including natural disasters, and including flood insurance. So today's show is all about flooding. Dun, dun, dun. We've had a number of big hurricanes in the past few weeks here in the United States, throughout the Caribbean. It's been absolutely devastating. It seems like it's been natural disaster after natural disaster. And I've gotten a lot of emails into the office, you know, what about flood insurance? What do I do if, you know, people that lived in the Houston market and had rental properties in the Houston area that got devastated? Or what about Louisiana and all that stuff? So today's episode, we're diving deep into floodplains. And my guest is an expert of floodplains. Her name is Carol Grove. She is a certified floodplain manager and a professional land surveyor, licensed in the state of Michigan since 1993, graduate of Michigan Technological University. She's been the owner of Alpine Land Surveying, which is in the Heartland, Michigan, since 1995. So she has decades of experience in floodplains. What goes into it? Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Clayton.
Well, this is an interesting discussion. I'm sure it sounds like your phone's been ringing off the hook there. I don't know, like with all of the stuff that we've had to deal with over the past few weeks in the United States. Have you been getting a lot of questions lately about floodplains and what exactly goes into a floodplain, how people can manage it, what we need to be worried about, and is my house in a floodplain?
Yep. Actually, we really get these phone calls pretty regularly every day. Someone's calling, they're trying to close a actual deal. And at the 11th hour, basically, they tell us that, you know, they're being forced to pay flood insurance. And so at that point, we usually step in and hopefully rescue them from the last minute mistake that they might be making. We just, in fact, just got off the phone with someone trying to build a hospital on the up in the Thumb area, Michigan. And they invested all kinds of money in the design and the construction. And again, they were going to purchase this property next week. And the entire property is blanketed in a flood zone and nobody bothered to tell them. So everything's coming to a screeching halt at this point for them.
So when you say you're able to come in and sort of rescue them, are you saying prevent them from ever buying the house in the first place? Or are you able to, you know, work with them to say, wait a second, this is actually not a floodplain any longer, and able to sort of work with the state, work with FEMA to reroute that? How exactly do you help people in that regard?
Well, of course, plan A would be get the property completely out of a flood zone. So the first thing we do is we investigate. There's a total misunderstanding on these flood zone maps. Everyone thinks that when there's a flood zone map and it shows property completely within a flood zone, immediately everyone thinks that that's gospel and that the entire property is in a flood zone. And that's not necessarily so. What really dictates whether a property is in a flood zone or not is the actual elevation of the property on the site. So we'll have a published elevation that once every 100 year, we're going to have a flood coming up to this elevation, and FEMA comes in and they create these maps and blanket entire areas in flood zones. But without us, unless we go out there and actually shoot the ground to determine the elevation at that location, we really don't know where the flood zone line truly is. So our advice to most people, if there's a flood zone somewhere nearby, you really need to get somebody out there to shoot that elevation to tell you whether it's completely within a flood zone or whether maybe the flood zone's not even anywhere near your property. That's pretty much how it is.
Well, I know what you mean. I had a property in New Jersey that I was flipping a few years ago, and one corner, once you drilled in on this map, like if you looked at it from like a 5,000 foot level, it looked like the whole area was in a flood zone. It was like, I think in Wayne, New Jersey, or part of Wayne, New Jersey, or something. And But it turned out that the property that we had acquired and we were going to flip was not on a, it was actually like the corner of the back of the huge backyard was in the flood zone. But the structure itself did not fall in that area. I mean, do you come across that kind of stuff a lot?
Every day. Actually, many lenders, the laws in the past couple of years have really toughened up, and these are federal laws. And what they're doing is they're, many lenders are saying, if a flood zone touches your property in any way, we're going to force flood insurance. And basically, it's up to the property owner to prove themselves innocent. So you're always going to be assumed guilty and in a flood zone unless you incur the expense of proving you're not in a flood zone. So, and basically the, these more recent laws that have, that the federal government has come up with, they've increased the fines to lenders to force the flood insurance.
Now, obviously a lot of our listeners are buying rental properties with cash, right? So they're coming out of pocket. Most of, in the areas where we are, we don't have, you know, a lot of flood zones in the areas where we invest. So I don't invest in Houston. That's not where I personally invest. I do a lot in Indianapolis. It's very minimal flood zone. I think in Indianapolis it's very minimal because it's one of those areas that doesn't have a navigable waterway. So it's one of those random cities that was sort of plopped there. That, you know, like Phoenix, right? It shouldn't even be a city because there's no, you know, it's not like St. Louis where, you know, Lewis and Clark were floating down the river, you know? But when you look at that and you're buying a property for cash and your insurance company, will your insurance guy tell you, hey, you know, you're going to probably want to get flood insurance on this property. Is that usually something that if, even if you're buying a property with cash is going to be asked of you?
Yeah. Basically if you're buying property cash, you don't have your lender looking out for you. So you have to be very careful. Lenders are required by law whenever there's buildings involved and they're about to loan money on property, they're required by law to use these flood certification companies. They're all over the country. There's about 90 of them, I believe. And when a lender sends a request off, these companies will actually do a search and they're going to basically make the call. Is the property in or is it out? These companies very often make mistakes. So what I would suggest is anyone purchasing property, whether you're a realtor, if you're an investor, you need to be looking up the properties yourself. I would not trust these flood certification companies. They really don't know where your property is located, but you are going to be able to see it better than anyone. And there are websites you can go to. It's actually a federal website you can go to. And actually, I'm not sure if there's a way we can post something after this and give you some instructions on how to get to that. And you can look it up yourself.
Great, great. Now let's, so we'll post that in our show notes page for people if they want to do that. And I don't want to scare people at all. So that's, you know, I want to really provide some truth here for people who were scared about, you know, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey, and oh, if I buy rental properties or even my primary residence, do I have the proper insurance? It's different than named storm coverage. So, okay, I need to have insurance for named storms like Harvey so that if shingles blow off my roof, that's covered. But then if the levee breaks, I need to have a different type of insurance for my property because that's flood insurance. And now my property's flooded. So what goes into determining whether or not a house sits in a floodplain? Can you walk me through some of the mechanics from a survey perspective?
Sure. Basically, we have our federal government who has created these flood maps, and we always talk about the 100-year flood zone, but what we really need to be calling it is a 1% chance of flooding. So in any given year, you may have a 1% chance of flooding. And these flood maps, many times, and we have a couple different types of flood zones, but the main flood zone is usually one that they'll give us an elevation that the water will come up to. So the way we prove a house or a property being in a flood zone or not is we would look up the elevation to determine what that, you know, height of the water is going to be. And then we go out and actually check the lowest point on the structure. So in your case, when you had a rental property, we would go to that property, shoot the lowest point where the ground meets the structure, not the basement floor. Many people think if the basement floor is 4 or 5 feet into a flood zone, it throws you into a flood zone. That's not true. It's going to be the lowest point on the exterior of the house.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay. So when the ground meets the house at that lowest point, is that point at or above that 100-year flood zone? If it's at it or above it, then I would say I'm 100% sure at that point I can officially remove this from the flood zone.
Okay, so let me back up a little bit there, because a couple of things I want to unpack. Basements, you know, in Detroit, in Indiana, I buy a lot of properties in Michigan. I have a lot of properties in Indianapolis. Basements, you know, in my Jacksonville homes, there's no basements, of course. I grew up with a basement in Pennsylvania, and in New Jersey, we have basements, but a lot of people, California, others don't have basements. So in Indianapolis, a lot of these old homes, you'll know, I mean, they'll even say it right on realty websites. It'll say the basements, don't keep your valuables in the basement. Most old homes are going to have some seepage. There's going to be water seepage that's going to come into these old, you know, into the foundations. That's just the way it is. You're going to get a little moisture. It's not the end of the world. It's just the way that it is. So you guys don't even consider basements as part of this process at all.
Well, the one thing to understand is the type of flood insurance that you're purchasing is the type of insurance that's going to cover a flood which comes from the flooding source, okay? So the water would literally have to raise up and cross the surface of the earth to get to the structure and damage the structure that way. If it's seepage through the basement walls, that type of insurance would not cover that. So flood insurance only covers it if it comes from the flooding source.
Right, like a river, nearby river or something.
Right. The water literally has to rise up. It can't be a broken pipe. It can't be a hydrant, letting water loose and flooding your yard. It has to come from a river, lake, stream, creek, and it would rise up and get to the actual foundation of the structure and touch it. And once it gets there, it could pour into your basement at that point.
Okay. And then that's when you could file a flood claim with your insurance company. Okay, gotcha. The other thing that you'd mentioned is if when you're there and you're surveying it and you're looking at the sort of 1% rule, that means you would remove it from a flood map if it only is there. So you want to have a house that's in the 1% rule, right? The 1 in 100 year flood map. That means that your chances are slim to none, and you would remove that house from the flood map. Did I understand you correctly?
Right. We call it the 1%. So if the ground around that house is at or above where that water would truly come to once every 100 years or one in any given year, a 1% chance, once we've determined that the ground is above it or at it, then we would officially remove it. So that's favorable. Now we have the 100-year. We also have a 500-year flood zone. And so anything over that would be once every 500 years. But the 100-year is the one that everybody cares about. That's the one where they force the flood insurance.
Okay. Now, if I had a property in a town, I could call in you or one of these 90 companies and have it actually surveyed. Would my mortgage company then actually pay attention to that if I submit it to them and let them know, hey, look, I got a professional survey done from this floodplain company that's going to analyze this? And then they'll say, great, you don't need to get that additional insurance.
Well, you're partially right and you're partially wrong here. Basically, those 90 companies or more are called flood certification companies. And those are who our lenders today are using. And they only pay, what we find in our area is for the most part, they're only paying between maybe $7.50 to $17 for a flood certification. It's really not worth the paper it's written on. Again, that just tells a lender yes or no to force the flood insurance. To really truly decide whether you're in a flood zone or not, and you should always do this prior to purchasing, you would want an actual licensed surveyor in your area to come out and shoot that lowest point on the structure. Many times you're going to have the lenders, insurance agents, and FEMA telling you to get what they call an elevation certificate. But we always say plan A would be get you out of the flood zone. Plan B would be get an elevation certificate to see if we can get you reduced, your rates reduced for FEMA's flood insurance. So we don't need to do an elevation certificate to get you out of a flood zone. We just go forward with a, what's called a letter of map amendment. That's a LOMA. And that's the document that we actually process through a FEMA website, and we actually officially remove the structures from a flood zone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Eero. That's E-E-R-O. Never think about Wi-Fi again. Look, I'm a big fan of Eero. I used to have really crappy Wi-Fi in my house. You know, you have those dead spots throughout your place. Until Eero came along. And what it is they decided to build an entire Wi-Fi mesh network in their home so that you get a fast, reliable connection in every room and even in your backyard. So we'll be out in the garden and we'll still have Wi-Fi. I was actually able to walk across the parking lot near the church near my house and still had Wi-Fi as I was like 100 feet away. It was ridiculous. So they last year in February 2016, they introduced the Eero home Wi-Fi system. Well, guess what? Now they have the second generation Eero systems, which are out. They look like small, like sort of like white little hockey pucks. They're gorgeous looking. The new Eero second generation, and they came out with the Eero Beacon. They allow a customer to build a Wi-Fi system that's more perfectly tailored to their home than ever before. So they have more speed, more range, and the same quality, high quality, elegant design that people have come to expect. So unlike a traditional router, where you just have like a router with like the little antennas sticking up, they're clunky, they're lower quality. They wanted to design a compact access point so that every Eero component, from the finishes to the enclosure to the circuit board, it's all gorgeous. And it creates a true sort of bubble throughout your whole home. So you're getting this entire mesh network so that every room has the same speed. So if you had that dead zone up in your, you know, up in your bedroom, no more, because each device is talking to the other device. And it'll all be the same consistent speed throughout the house. It's super simple to set up too. You buy the Eero system, you plug them in, and you literally launch the app, the Eero app. So download it on your Android phone or your iOS device. Just download the Eero app. It's super simple to set up as you add the different components throughout the room. And now with the Eero beacons, these are great. You can just plug them right into a traditional outlet on the wall, and it has a little nightlight built into it too, which is great. And so with the Eero app, it lets you manage your entire network from the palm of your hand. So you'll know how many devices are connected at any given point. So you can see that your kids' iPads are connected to the network. You can also check the internet speed and see what kind of speeds you're getting from your internet service provider, whether it's Verizon or AT&T or Comcast, whatever. So what's amazing is they'll push out new software updates on a regular basis so that make sure that your home network is not vulnerable to cyber attacks or anything like that. They really care about giving you fast, reliable internet coverage for your home. I'm a huge fan. I have Eero throughout the house. I love it. And I love the brand new second generation as well with the Eero beacons. We put those in our basement. And so now we got the little night lights down there, and it gets super fast speed, even in our basement, which was below ground next to a brick foundation, and it works fast. So check them out today. Go over to Eero.com. I want you to use the promo code when you go to Eero.com. Use the promo code INVESTING. And that will give you free overnight shipping on anything you buy. Free overnight shipping in the United States or Canada. Go to Eero.com, and at checkout, make sure you click the overnight shipping option and then put in the promo code INVESTING, and it'll get you free shipping. Check them out today. Eero.com. That's Eero.com. Thanks, Eero. I love you guys. What are the fees associated with doing something like that? You know, for a lot of... I know just even from the maps and so forth, looking at my and what my insurance companies would require. You know, I'm not in any flood zones, but if I were, I would then want to have this stuff taken care of and maybe get this removed. What sort of a fees are associated with trying to get this like taken off and sort of battling insurance and all that sort of stuff?
Well, here in Michigan, many times we'll charge. Usually a minimal fee just to go check the structure. Many people will try and do the elevation certificate for you, and that's going to be a considerable more. It could be anywhere from, several hundred dollars up to over $1,000 for an elevation certificate, depending on how far away the property is from their office, and you know, travel time, and how large the structure is also. But to do an elevation certificate, again, that's what everyone's going to try and do for you. But what you really want to do is you want to get them to just check the property, tell me, am I in or out? If I'm not in, then you want to proceed with a LOMA. And I would have to say a lot of times on just a regular residential house, we can remove those from flood zones for somewhere around $1,000.
Great. So for a lot of people listening, this is primarily for your primary residence, right? This is where you would probably be looking into this kind of a service if it's the house you live in, I would think, right?
That is correct. In fact, in Michigan today, many times, in fact, in some areas, we can, about 85% of the time when someone's paying flood insurance, we actually can get them out. So that's how often we are successful in removing people from flood zones. And the worst part about this whole flood zone topic is many people are told by their lenders, insurance agents, the federal government, that you're in a flood zone and you just have to pay. But many times people don't know you have the option of getting out.
That's amazing. So the first step in, if you live in a primary, you know, this is your primary residence, you've been paying flood insurance for years, you might have been told you needed to, and you might just be eating that cost every year, go to this website. We'll link it up in our show notes page. So if you go to morrisinvest.com/podcast for this episode, this is episode number 213. So please go there, check that out, episode 213, and you can see the links so you can check if your primary residence is in there. Now, for rental properties, it's a bit of a different animal, and let's dive into some of the discussions about the way in which, you know, like Houston was like destroyed. I talked to the head of the Army Corps of Engineers a few weeks ago who told me that because of the luxury homes that were built in the area where they would love to have put these new storm doors, new storm pumps, they can't. They don't have the infrastructure to do it. There's 70-year-old infrastructure there, and therefore these areas, these low-lying areas with the clay soil, it just, you know, got hammered. They had a couple of these 100-year floods within like 3 years of each other. So people keep rebuilding, they keep, you know, going back, but then they keep getting flooded again. So when you look at an area like that, well, first of all, just give me your high-level sense of what happened in Houston, and maybe we can get into some specifics about it.
Well, the one thing that you have to remember is there's all different levels of floods. In fact, every one of us lives in a flood zone. If you're on top of a mountain, you live in a flood zone, okay? And it just depends. And my understanding is from the Houston area, some of those experts are telling us that that might have even been a 1,000-year flood zone, something that would happen once only every 1,000 years. So they were very blindsided. Everyone out there thought they were safe, and they thought that their houses were built high enough that they would never experience a flood. And it wasn't so, obviously. We had something very unexpected. So I guess that's probably all I've got to say about that. You never, when it floods, it doesn't just flood to a 100-year flood zone. It very often will flood higher than that. And in their case, it flooded quite a bit higher.
Now, what about these storm pumps? I don't know if you can speak to this or not in your experience from flooding. What structures do you see as being the most prone to flooding? Are there structures near certain bodies of water, certain areas of the country that you would be worried about, or, you know, things like that in your experience? These are ones that you would avoid at all costs if you're a real estate investor.
Oh boy, that's a tough question. As far as the pumps go, that's more of an engineering question. I'm not real privy to all the information as what happened specifically in that area in Houston and if pumps had failed or so I can't speak directly to that situation. I know that if you have a flooding source nearby and you have flood zones on a map, you just have to be careful when you're building or purchasing in those areas. And you're never going to be foolproof. So probably the correct answer for this would be if you're concerned, you should probably get flood insurance. If you're not in a high-risk zone, for instance, if I see somebody who's in a high-risk zone and I go in and I remove them from that high-risk zone because they're higher than the 100-year flood zone, we could then advise them to go back and get the same identical flood insurance, but it would be at a much reduced rate because now they're no longer considered in that high-risk zone. So flood insurance is not very expensive for those who are not in the 100-year flood zone.
Oh, interesting.
For those who are in, I think I said that right, correct?
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. So you could go back, once you have that removed, you could go back and then just get it adjusted and still keep flood insurance, but at a reduced rate because now you're not technically, because of that blanket map that FEMA used that was not accurate, now it's been revised and it's accurate based on your surveying.
Correct.
Interesting. You know, let's talk about the FEMA process for a little bit here. And it seems like, you know, FEMA places these like sort of blank, these sort of maps, they sort of blanket over areas without ever having gone to the properties. And that obviously causes a lot of this mischaracterization for people and primary purchasers who are moving into a property with their family. But the flood claim process and what that looks like, if you're not in a floodplain, but you get flooded, you're not in a FEMA floodplain, but you do get flooded, are you able to file a FEMA flood claim?
For the most part, you're not, because unless you were to actually carry flood insurance. A lot of people think that, in fact, I've been told this again just recently, that if you are not in a flood zone, you don't qualify for flood insurance. And that is completely false. Anybody can purchase flood insurance, okay? Except for there are areas where we have non-participating communities. I think I just misspoke. We have areas that are not mapped, okay? If you're going to purchase the flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program and your area is mapped, even though you're not in a flood zone, you would still be able to buy flood insurance. And most areas across our country are mapped today. So many people, if you're concerned about FEMA flood insurance, you should be able to purchase it if you're concerned about getting flooded.
Okay. Now, what if you are not in what, you're not in a FEMA flood zone, or you're in a FEMA flood zone based on their mapping, okay? Mm-hmm. Throwing you some hypotheticals here. And then you guys come in, or someone else comes in and does a survey and helps remove them from it, right? They're able to go get their revised insurance. So now they're technically not in a floodplain any longer because it's been revised. Are they, and then they do get flooded. Are they still able to go through the FEMA claim process, even though, because FEMA thought they were, but then you prove them that they weren't? What happens then in that situation?
Well, basically, if you're still carrying flood insurance, you would be covered. But if you cancel your flood insurance because you think you're never going to flood, then you would not be covered. You actually have to carry flood insurance to be covered to the point where you can file a claim.
Interesting. Talk a little bit about, while we wrap it up here, the different types of soils. What we saw, like for instance, in Jacksonville on our properties, we're about 15 miles inland where we do our rehabs and renovations, and we're not in a flood zone. And we didn't sustain any damage. We had some wind, you know, we had some like branches down, things like that, palm fronds and things, but no flooding. The coastal areas though, right by the water, they had the storm surge in the sandy soil. But then you have this clay soil in Houston where it could only handle about an inch of water, I think, in a 24-hour period. So the absorption rate, you're up in Michigan where I've talked to investors. I have a lot of properties in that area, and I know some insurance guys in the Michigan area, and they don't really worry about flooding there because the soil can handle more of that saturation. So talk to me a little bit about the saturation of these different soils and how relevant that is.
Well, and when you're, it's not just the saturation of the soils. We also look for the terrain. So when you get into those southern areas, we have a lot of very flat areas. You can go inland in Florida, for instance, and you'll see that you're only a few feet above the flood, or I'm sorry, a few feet above the sea level. So in Michigan, we have, you know, there's many areas where we're, you know, 800-900 feet above sea level, and we have lots of rolling terrain where the ground would, in the event of heavy rains, everything runs and you would actually have it running in certain directions. In Florida, you have to have ground that's going to absorb it because there's no relief in the ground. So, but yes, and this, as far as the soils, that's huge also, just like the terrain would be huge. In some areas you have that terrible soil that's just not absorbing anything. And that's the worst type because you obviously have a lot of ponding then.
Good stuff. And insurance for flood insurance is, can you compare some rates in your experience? You said, you know, if you're on that flood map, it's a little bit more expensive. If you're not on that map, then it's going to be less expensive. Do you have an idea, like per month, what flood insurance even costs?
Yeah, actually, it's getting worse every year. There are two new laws that your listeners could go and look up, and you could Google the words Biggert Waters Act of 2012, and you can also Google the words or the act. It's called the Affordability Act of 2014. These two federal laws, between the two of them, and again, we're going back and forth between these two laws right now, they are pushing premiums for flood insurance up severely. Many of our older homes today in the United States have always been subsidized and grandfathered. The Biggert Waters Act is eliminating that altogether. So when you have an older home that was in a flood zone, maybe with a basement, and you used to only pay $600 a year, now they're increasing the premiums as much as 20% per year. And many homeowners are getting letters stating that these premiums are going to start increasing until it could be for several years, actually. And it could be as much as $10,000 up to $12,000 or $14,000 a year that you're going to end up paying for flood insurance over the next couple years. So it started out right now, many people in the South might only be paying, you know, $400 to $600 a year. They're probably increasing to over $1,000 a year. In the North here, it's not unusual for us to see rates going up to $4,000 or $5,000 a year now for a residential home.
Wow. And again, these are for primary residences. You're living there with your family, not for investment properties as we're talking about. But of course, you can as well get insurance in that regard for investment properties if you want to. I personally, on all of mine, don't have any flood insurance because I'm not in a floodplain. But this is all valuable information. So, Carol, bottom line this for us. It sounds like it can be a little scary, but I don't want to scare people. I just want people to be educated about this.
I would say the bottom line is we need to start looking properties up. When you're going to invest in a piece of property, again, there's going to be a link that we're going to send you to here in your notes. And it's if you go to this FEMA website, you can actually feed an address in and zoom right in. And anything in blue is going to be FEMA flood zone. And if you have anywhere near the property you're about to invest in, if you have any blue at all, then you should definitely call a surveyor to get out there and shoot some elevations on that property prior to purchasing.
Gotcha. Good stuff, Carol. Well, I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much for your expertise in this area and helping to educate our audience about floodplains. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
And thanks, everyone, for downloading and subscribing. Please head on over to our website where you can click on that link that Carol and I were talking about. Go to episode 213. So it's morrisinvest.com/episode213, where you can check out the links that we were talking about and check out those resources and tools. We will be back here on Wednesday with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Natalie and I will be back to talk about some new goodies that we've been working on. We'll share those with you on Wednesday. And then you don't want to miss on Thursday, we've got Brent Daniels is going to be joining us on showing you how to find discounted properties. And we're going to walk you through step-by-step how we do it with Brent. So until next time, everyone, go out there, take action, become a real estate investor, and be educated about your properties. Thanks, everyone.